light was back in his eyes. "Warriors who love me, gird yourselves," cries he, and shook his spear. "Leave everything behind but your arms, and follow me. Hassani, assemble them and those others who remain true at the upper gate. Away!" And as they trooped out, he turned to me. "Dear friend, we part here. You can serve me no longer. I go now beyond your army's vengeance, and you and I will never meet again." He seized my hand in both of his. "Farewell, British soldier. Think kindly of Theodore, who is your friend. If you should hear of my death at the hands of my foes, do not grieve. My destiny is my destiny." He strode out with a flourish worthy of Macbeth, and I heard him bawling orders to Hassani. I was left, mighty relieved and quite used up, with a couple of artillerymen for company. The rest were lying tuckered out, down the track by their abandoned guns. There was no point in my moving, with Islamgi crawling with confused and disgruntled warriors who mightn't take kindly to a stray Ferengi. Better to wait patiently for Napier to arrive. So I disposed myself for a nap, thanking God I was rid of a royal knave. I wasn't, of course. He was back at dawn with his fretful followers, several hundred of them. They'd tried to break out of Magdala by the back door, which would have meant a terrifying descent of the Sangalat cliffs in pitch darkness, if they'd been mad enough to attempt it. They'd been discouraged by the presence of Galas, who were waiting for them at the foot of the precipice, chanting, "Come down, beloved, oh, come down!" I must say, I liked the Galas's style. With his retreat cut off, and the greater part of his army milling about down on Islamgi, waiting to surrender, I was sure he must call it a day. But even now he couldn't bear to submit. He told his little band of loyalists that they and any others on the plateau were free to go, and if he was disheartened at the stampede down to Islamgi, he didn't show it. With the few score who remained, he made a last futile attempt to bring the guns and mortars up the track, and when that failed, he had them piling rocks behind the wings of the Kobet Bar gate, lifting and carrying himself, and shouting encouragement. It wouldn't have been tactful to stand watching while they laboured away, so I waited until the gate tower was empty, purloined Theodore's telescope, which he had left with his baggage, and withdrew along the inside of the wall to a spot where I could take survey of the Islamgi plain. There were a few folk in the marketplace at the foot of the track, children playing on the guns which had been left behind by Damish's crew, but farther along the plain there were great multitudes of Abs of every sort, civilian and military, stirring in a confused way, but going nowhere, waiting for the invaders to arrive, in fact. They were thick on the slope of Selesi, a bare mile from my perch, and farther off I could see them on Fala. There must have been a good 20,000 or 30,000 of them. How long I sat watching, I'm not sure, but the sun was well up and disappearing behind dark rain clouds when I heard a faint distant sound that had me on my feet and put an abrupt end to the barrier building at the gate. The whisper of a bugle, far off beyond Fala. And now the mass of folk on Islamgi were moving off towards the sound and streaming down the Selesi slope to the gap leading to Aragi. There was sudden activity at Kobet Bar, men moving down the track to the guns, which Damash had been able to get partway up. I saw Theodore ordering them as they tailed on the tackles, trying to haul the heavy pieces up the steep incline, but making poor work of it. There was a great murmur from the moving throng on the plain, and then another faraway sound rising above it, stirring and shrill, and I found myself whispering, "Ho-ho, the dandy, ho!" For I knew it of old, the music of the Sherwood Foresters. And it couldn't be more than a couple of miles away, beyond the Fala saddle, growing louder by the minute. And now the movement of the crowds was becoming a flood, and damned if I wasn't doing a Theodore myself, brushing the tears from my cheeks and muttering about the young May moon a-beaming love, the glowworm's lamp a-gleaming love, and even exclaiming aloud, "Good for you, old bug-hunter! That's your sort!" For here he was, horse, foot, and guns, at the end of the impossible march to the back of beyond, which the wiseacres had sworn could never be made. His army was, as he'd said it would be, bone-weary and struggling up the last few miles, filthy and sun-baked and rain-sodden,
and still unsure of what was waiting, for rumour said that Theodore had 10,000 warriors at his back, and as he looked up at the heights of